You're listening to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M, where she breaks down the nitty gritty basics of nursing concepts. Hello and welcome back to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M. Today I'm going to break down cardioversions versus defibrillations. And I'm going to first start with the concept of cardioversions, which is oftentimes an elective procedure. This one, if you think about it, easy way to remember this is defibrillation starts with a D and that's for dead people. Cardioversion starts with a C and that's for alive people. There's not a good rhyming reason for that, but D is for dead, so defibrillation's for dead people. Cardioversion we can do it either chemically or electrically. From an electrical standpoint, that's what I'm going to talk about today. An electrical cardioversion is a synchronized countershock to convert an undesirable rhythm to a stable rhythm. And this can be an elective procedure, often performed by some sort of provider for some type of stable tachydysrhythmia. And oftentimes these are rhythms that are kind of resistant or haven't converted properly with medical therapies that have been tried. Or it can also be for an emergent procedure for someone that is hemodynamically unstable in aventricular or supraventricular tachydysrhythmia. But if this is the instance, these patients, even though they're hemodynamically unstable, they will still be conscious, they will still have a pulse. So we still classify it as a cardioversion and not a defibrillation because, again, defibrillation is for dead. But electrical cardioversion is when we use a lower amount of energy than we would use with defibrillation. And again, that makes sense because these patients often have a heartbeat and they're live and they're talking and they're properly circulating. They just have an abnormal rhythm that needs to be converted versus the individual that is clinically dead. We would need to defibrillate with a much higher electrical voltage because we need to really shock the heart awake. And so if you're the nurse doing an electrical cardioversion, there's some key things that you want to make sure have occurred before you proceed or actually cardiovert the patient. And the first one is, oftentimes because these are elective, we need to make sure that a timeout is done before the procedure. This ensures that you are working with the right patient, you have the consent form that's been signed, the patient doesn't have any questions, and then you've got all of your ABCs covered. So they've got their airway and you've got oxygen on them, and you've got they're breathing down fine, but you might need some sort of emergent respiratory equipment like an Ambu bag, and you've got your code cart nearby because, again, we're messing with the heart. So you want to make sure that all of your emergency equipment is present, and you want to make sure that your defibrillation pads are in place and choose the jewels based off of what the provider asks you to for the cardioversion, all based on their order. And yes, it is defibrillation pads that we're using for cardioversion because the cardioversion is just oftentimes an elective procedure at a lower voltage, but we use the same pads because that's how we have to deliver the electricity. And then you must push, this is the key with electrical cardioversion, you must push the sync button on the defibrillation machine. And we do this to prevent R-on-T phenomenon. And basically what that means is that it allows the shock to be provided safely away from the T wave. And think back to your basic rhythms, P, Q, R, S, T. And we don't want to deliver the shock between the R and the T, because then we will cause an R-on-T phenomenon and we can put these patients into a lethal arrhythmia. Now, once you hit the sync button on your defibrillating machine, you should see a rhythm, and then you should be looking for the indicator above that rhythm, which oftentimes on many machines is a tiny little dot above the QRS complex that tells you that it is in sync mode. Once you've confirmed that it is in sync mode and you're ready to cardiovert this individual electrically, you need to give them sedation. They are wide awake, and to be electrically shocked whilst awake to alter your heart's rhythm and pattern is incredibly painful, so don't do that. From a testing perspective, I've read in the books that, you know, yes, during that procedure, you want to make sure that your skin is clean and dry, where the electrode pads are, because if you have someone incredibly hairy, for example, how do you think the electrode pads are going to stick? Not very well. So you have to really make sure that you've got good contact between the pads and the skin of the individual. And then I've read in some books that you want to stop oxygen during the procedure in order to prevent a fire hazard. That, clinically, that makes sense to me when I read about that. But I'm going to tell you right now that in my shop, like, I guess what you do in book world versus what you're doing in real life is two different things, because I've never stopped someone's oxygen when I've done an electrical cardioversion. And the other big thing which we do always make sure that we do during a procedure is to make sure that no one is touching the bed or the client when delivering the counter shock, because that shock can have a little bit of transference, and whoever's touching the person or the bed, again, think about this logically, hospital beds are full of metal, it conducts really well. So people that are touching it often get a little bit of a jolt themselves. Now, once the electrical cardioversion is done, your priority assessment is of this patient is going to include airway and breathing and making sure that they still have an airway, they're still breathing on their own. If you followed the book version and you turned off the oxygen, you would immediately resume giving them oxygen and then assess their vital signs, assess their level of consciousness, look at the rhythm. Did what we do just work? And then we want to basically, from a nursing perspective, monitor for indications of successful response from the conversion to a sinus rhythm. And what does that look like in a human? It's going to be, do they have strong peripheral pulses? Is their blood pressure adequate? You know, you can even go further to say, like, do they have an appropriate amount of urine output? Because that means that their kidneys are adequately being perfused. And then look at their actual skin on the chest, where the pads were once you've removed them, because we want to look to make sure that there aren't any substantial burns, especially around the edges of the pads, because that is quite painful. The main thing that I've seen when I've removed the pads is normally patients will walk out after an elective cardioversion with basically the equivalent of a sunburn, and those heal. Now, the three big rhythms that I've most commonly done an electrical cardioversion on are going to be supraventricular tachycardia. Again, the origin of where that tachyarrhythmia is originating from is above the ventricles, hence superior or above the ventricles, atrial flutter. And then the biggest one that I've done electrical cardioversions on have been in a controlled outpatient setting have been atrial fibrillations. And when we think about these sorts of rhythms, oftentimes we have patients in atrial fibrillation that will live for months or years on an anticoagulant. If we might be trying to see if they'll tolerate it, some don't, or some just can't be on anticoagulants. But before you go to shock them, you'd better make sure that they have been properly taking their anticoagulant, because newsflash, if they haven't, they could have developed potentially a clot. And then as soon as their heart goes into like a normal sinus rhythm, you have the potential to now send that clot, you know, to the brain. And that could be bad because strokes are bad. Now, defibrillation. Defibrillation is an asynchronous countershock used to terminate pulseless ventricular tachycardia or ventricular fibrillation. The difference is that we don't care where we shock, because in pulseless ventricular tachycardia, the ventricles are beating way too fast and they're hemodynamically unstable. You know, they're unconscious. You can't feel a pulse. So they're not actually perfusing. These are life-threatening rhythms. And the same with ventricular fibrillation. There's no rhyme or reason behind how the heart is beating because it's not perfusing. And these patients are unconscious. This is not an elective procedure. This is an emergent procedure. And it follows in track with the advanced cardiac life support treatment modality. And so we are shocking these individuals at a much higher voltage. And that can be anywhere between 120 to 360 joules, depending on if the machine that you're using is classified as a biphasic or a monophasic machine. And basically what that means is if it's a biphasic, you have two pads on the person, so electricity is coming in from both angles to the heart. And if it's a monophasic, it's basically going from one pad to the other, which is why monophasic requires higher voltage, because it's not getting attacked from both sides, it's just going down through one side. So here's the deal with the defibrillation. Once you defibrillate a lethal arrhythmia, if you're defibrillating a lethal arrhythmia, whether that's pulseless ventricular tachycardia or ventricular fibrillation, these people do not have a pulse, they are clinically dead, you follow the ACLS treatment modality, which is shock them and then you immediately resume CPR and continue that for 5 cycles or 2 minutes, and you do the 5 cycles or 2 minutes and then you do a rhythm check, etc., follow the ACLS protocol. And if you get successful conversion from a ventricular fibrillation to a normal sinus rhythm, for example, then you would follow basically whatever your hospital's protocol is for patients who obtain ROSC, which is what we call it, R-O-S-C, return of spontaneous circulation. A classic nursing school question that they like to ask in order to assess whether or not you understand the difference between cardioversion and defibrillation, for example, or just like your thought process of how would you treat or approach this patient, is they'll give you a rhythm, or they'll just tell you in the root of a question, like you're on shift and your patient, you look at the monitor at the nurse's station and suddenly it looks like it's ventricular fibrillation. Like, what's your first priority? And your first priority should always be A, to assess your patient, because it could be that very well that they're in their room brushing their teeth, and every time they go in to do the toothbrushing motion, they could be knocking on the electrode lead, causing artifact, which will mimic and kind of look like ventricular fibrillation. But if you're in the room and it's witnessed, the key is if it's pulseless ventricular tachycardia or if it's ventricular fibrillation, you defib. So if it's VFib, you defib, call a code, no sync, and do the whole CPR protocol. So that's my quick summary of electrical cardioversion versus defibrillation. Again, with electrical cardioversion, oftentimes it's elective. Patients are awake and we sedate them for this. You will synchronize the machine with the QRS to avoid the R-on-T phenomenon. The joules that we give, much lower. These patients better have a consent form available. And then again, EKG monitor in place. Follow your emergency protocols. Do they have an airway? Are they breathing? Is there oxygen? Is there a code cart? And then you cardiovert and assess your patient looking for adequate cardiac output versus defibrillation, which are patients that are clinically dead. If it's VFib, you defib. This is an emergency. If it's VFib or pulseless ventricular tachycardia, they don't have cardiac output. There is no output going to them. So every single organ is dying. We use much higher voltage, anywhere between, 120 to 360 joules. These patients are, here's the key, unconscious. You have them on an EKG monitor, you defibrillate, and then you follow the advanced cardiac life support protocol. Or if you're in the field and you just have an AED that shows up and the machine says shock advised, and they shock the patient, go back onto the chest and start CPR before emergency personnel gets there. So that's all I've got on those two. Go forth and keep on learning.